Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Internet Report's Pulse Update, the bi-weekly podcast where we discuss what's up, what's down, what's working and not working, and generally keep our finger on the pulse of the internet and how it's holding up week over week. So this week, we're going to be discussing some back-end infrastructure work and some other back-end related issues, DBS and Citibank outages, plus some Japanese bank outages. We're also going to be discussing Microsoft Exchange and some Google platform disruptions. So joining me to discuss all this week is Bernie Claremont, my good friend, colleague, and senior solutions engineer here at Thousand Eyes. Welcome back to the Pulse Update podcast.
Thanks, Mike. Happy to be here.
So with that, let's start with a download, my TLDR summary of what to know about the internet this week in just a few minutes or less. So we're constantly striving for these simple customer experiences where you just click on something and everything appears on your screen there. But these hide a complex backend of assets, services, containers, APIs, and any one break in that chain, any incident that occurs in any one of those components can actually cause significant degradations. So that's why it's important to have quick identifications of the issues. So if you identify where the issue is, you can actually determine the best course of action, which on some occasions may actually be to wait for it actually to resolve itself rather than to go through and activate a backup system. So this has sometimes been the case in some recent issues we've seen, which include a data center plant upgrade, which impacted a banking and a telephony services, as well as some back-end hardware replacements, which disabled some interbank transfers. So the first one that you want to talk about really occurred in Singapore, and it impacted some major banks being DBS and Citibank, again within Singapore itself, along with a cellular telco network, Red One. They experienced an outage when a chiller upgrade at a particular facility, an Equinix facility in Singapore, didn't quite go as planned. So the outage started on the afternoon of Saturday, the October the 14th, but the services weren't fully recovered until the following morning. And we'll chat more about what happened and why later in the episode. So the next outage was a major Japanese interbank communication system where they faced a two-day outage that impacted a number of Japanese banks. So the outage started on October the 10th and reportedly delayed between 1.4 million and 2 million outbound remittances. The incident actually occurred due to processing errors after systems relay computers, so the computers in the middle to actually relay that the systems were replaced. So we had Google Cloud VM Engine, where they experienced a three-hour downtime on October the 18th. Now, this was actually due to a loss of multiple VPC circuits, and this occurred within a Sydney data center, which caused connectivity issues for stretch clusters and disconnections of hosts within vCenter. Services were restored after Google brought back up a backup transit link, but some customers may have experienced a residual impact. Again, the impact was sort of local. It impacted these areas within Sydney and said it was actually restored after they brought up the transit link there. So rounding out our TLDR this week, on October 11th, some Exchange Online users had issues with sent emails not actually being sent. Now, Microsoft acknowledged the delays in receiving external email messages in Exchange, and at the time of this podcast recording, are still investigating whether it was actually related to issues within a back-end SQL infrastructure. Now, the impacted users may have actually seen a server busy error messages. And what Thousand Eyes observed was timeouts in our tests where messages would appear to complete normally, but then hang behind the scenes. So that's it for the download for this week. Now let's dive deeper into one of these outages and some of the recent trends we've seen. As always, we've included chapter links in the description box below so you can skip ahead to any sections that are most interesting to you. And if you haven't subscribed yet, we'd please like you to go and subscribe. In fact, we'd love you to subscribe. It really helps us out. And also make sure that you know when the latest episode actually drops. So please feel free to email us at internetreport@thousandeyes.com with any questions, feedback, or any suggestions you actually want for the podcast. And with that, now let's take a look at the overall outage trends we've been seeing. So during the 2-week period from October the 9th to the 22nd, the number of global outages slightly increased and then decreased. So in that first week, which is October 9th to the 15th, the number of outages worldwide rose from 184 to 192, which actually represents around 4% increase compared to the previous week, which was October 2nd to the 8th. However, in that following week, the observed outages dropped 15%, decreasing from 192 to 163.
Yeah, Mike, I always find it interesting to, you know, take a look at these outage trends and, you know, looking at the U.S. outages, you know, and the way they looked, you know, they didn't actually follow that global trend over the last 2 weeks. Instead, you know, that slight increase followed by the bigger decrease, we actually saw the U.S. outages increase and then just level off and plateau. So initially, you know, from 69 to 75, which is about a 9% increase, you know, when compared to the October 2nd to the 8th, you know, however, in the next week, October 16th to the 22nd, the outages remained, you know, roughly around the same level, like the 75 range.
And the other thing I actually want to note here is that between October the 9th and 22nd, and sort of bang on what you said there, the US-based outages accounted for 42% of all observed outages. Now, this is actually in line with a trend observed almost every 2 weeks since April 2023, where the US-based outages have been pretty consistently accounting for at least 40% of all observed outages in a given two-week period. Now, this actually differs from previous year, where we've actually sort of seen it below that 40%.
Yeah, that's a great note. You know, I mean, also, you know, the thought was interesting around the fact that, you know, we saw a brief departure from this trend in the previous 2 weeks, September 25th through the October 8th period. You know, now we're back to the usual 40% plus, you know, above the numbers we're seeing. You know, I kind of wonder if we see additional fluctuations and departures from these trends as we head into the final months of the year. I mean, especially as you think about change control freezes for, you know, Black Friday, you know, the holiday season, people don't want to actually have to, you know, be on call all the time and have to deal with outages. So there's always those change freezes towards the end of the year for the holiday season.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, we don't want to be on call to deal with those outages, but at the same time, the companies can't afford those outages. Because as you mentioned, things like Black Friday, and sort of from a commercial perspective, and then we're getting into the holiday season as well, where we probably goes into, we don't want to be called out. But equally, you know, we don't want to have the internet down at that moment in time.
Exactly.
So with that, let's discuss one of the outages we saw the last 2 weeks as we go under the hood. So in Singapore, the major banks, DBS and Citibank, along with the cellular telco Red One, they faced outages which were due to a chiller upgrade that went wrong. Now this occurred at an Equinix facility. The outage actually occurred on October the 14th and services were actually restored the following morning. So what I actually want to do is actually want to sort of dive in and show you what that looked like within the ThousandEyes platform. And for those of you that actually aren't familiar with ThousandEyes, it's a platform that gives you a great view of the entire digital supply chain. So we're able to see what's going on across the internet itself. We have ThousandEyes agents across the internet providing us with multiple vantage points. So we can see disruptions that are happening both at network and application level and at server levels there. So with this visibility, it actually allows you to see specifically what's happening across holistically across the environment, allowing you to understand what's occurring so you can make changes, you can take know what action you're going to take, basically identify where the problem is or areas where you can optimize going forward. All right, so we're now looking at the ThousandEyes platform. What I wanted to do, Bernie, was actually start coming in from Internet Insights. So Internet Insights is that view where I'm going to take all the data in. So this is if I'm looking outside, I haven't had to instrument anything, I'm actually in a holistic view of what's going on. Now, what I can see at the top, well, the first thing I should probably say is what I've actually done is I'm looking here at application outages. So we know that the applications that were impacted were Citibank, DBS, and we said with the cellular telco, Red One as well. So what I've actually done here is I've actually got looking filtered down on Citibank, so I can actually see their customer-facing applications or these applications that were essentially sort of served out of here, or to see where I had issues from there. So if I look at this top timeline, time barrier here, it actually shows me the duration. Now, we talked about this actually going out. What I'm showing here is 1 hour, 5 minutes. It shows me it's affecting 3 servers. What we're actually looking at here is specifically what happened in terms of identifying where the outage was occurring and sort of how it was impacting. So we're showing here the 100% packet loss, we're actually showing here the application disruption that was occurring there. Why this actually then went on for 2 days was because we'd have actually seen beyond that, the service would have been diverted. We could have actually used other servers to actually sort of get the performance back up. So this is why we're actually only showing an hour and a half when we actually stated we're looking at sort of a 2 day outage there. So the first thing, Bernie, I want to just comment on there is again, that's the only filter I've got on here. All I've got in there is looking at sort of the Citibank application. But I can see on the left-hand side here, what I'm actually looking in this Sankey diagram is I can actually then see all the regions that were impacted. So these are regions where we have agents looking and testing to this application, and there we can actually sort of see where those regions impacted. And the first thing that strikes me here is that they are all in one region, as in they're all in sort of the APJC, so I can see them occurring there. What does that tell us, basically?
I mean, that definitely says folks in that region are having a problem accessing the city. for sure. And they're probably calling in or, you know, trying to refresh or, you know, connect back in for their transactions. So, you know, I think one of the powerful things with, you know, Internet Insights is just the simple fact that you can quickly isolate down these larger outages and be able to tell, like, hey, this is a big outage and these are the people that are affected, or these are the regions or locations that are going to be calling in or having issues, so that you can mitigate that quickly.
Exactly. Or sort of fake steps. So I said, you know, if you go back to that 1.5 hours, 1 hour 5 minutes, sorry, I apologize there, 1 hour 5 minutes, the duration of this disruption we're actually seeing there, we can see here, these are the people that have been impacted, these are regionally impacted. So therefore, exactly what you said, we can now start to understand what processes we want to put in place, how we mitigate this issue, how we work around it. You know, we said at the top of the show, there may be instances where we do nothing, because the restoration time is going to be quicker than it would for us to start a backup system, or to move there, or to re-advertise our network out from there. But again, what we'd like to do this, if you think about, we've got a field full of haystacks. So multiple haystacks, we need to not just find where that needle is, we need to find which haystack we need to look in for that needle first of all. And that's what I like to think of sort of Internet Insights allows us to do, so actually look at those, that field, to pick out the haystack where we need to go, and then we'll go and look and identify that needle.
Absolutely. Yeah, the other thing too is breaking down the application versus the network, so you quickly know that this is an application related issue, not a network related problem.
It's a great point. Yeah, and I actually didn't point that out. As I said, I'm actually looking at the applications, and therefore I'm looking at servers impacted. So with that, and that's actually a great segue, let's actually take a little bit further in there. So we send this application, but let's just sort of confirm how that manifests itself by going down to into that needle to have a look at what it looks like at a more granular level. All right, Bernie, so as we said, so we got with haystacks, we've actually gone in. I'm now looking at an individual test. I've started to come down to specifically see what's happening on that area there. So the top here, this is a detailed view. I've drilled down essentially from the Internet Insights. I've identified that under those, I've got server timeouts sitting within the server itself. We know we've identified the region, and now I'm actually looking down from here. So the first thing I see on the timeline, and I've gone straight in from, I've sort of come up, we've already identified that we're looking potentially an application. I want to just make sure where that folder actually lies, basically. So I could look at HTTP server. What that's going to show me is unavailability. So I'm just going to see sort of a blank there. So what I want to do is then just confirm the network. So I've gone into path visualization. So straight away at the top here, again, I can see that correlation in terms of time, and I'm looking at 100% packet loss. So when I see 100% packet loss, to me, that means there's some sort of break in the network. Now, again, we've talked about it being an application level. So this indicates to me that I can't get to that endpoint. Is that a fair assumption?
No, absolutely, Mike. I mean, I think, you know, when these outages happen, it's really critical to be able to figure out, is this the app team or is it the network team? You need to be able to be involved in this to resolve it. And also having a baseline over time is really nice. So 1000Eyes gives you that baseline to go back and see, what did this look like before when it was working? Now here's the outage. Did it repair itself or was it repaired? Is it behaving the same way? Is the service responding the same way?
Exactly. Again, I've mentioned this many times on the podcast. I'm a man of very simple, a network engineer, very simply. And if I look at the patterns, if the pattern differs from one to the other, okay, we can see that it's very easy then to identify what's going on. A picture paints 1,000 words, as they say. So then as we go in, so I'm actually looking there at this, the path visualization of where it comes. So coming from the left-hand side where I actually have my node, first of all, I can actually see these are sort of showing me that I've actually got their red. So this is actually failed, it's timed out. This test is not finishing, basically, where it goes through there. So then I go through my various hops. I can identify hours as it transits through the various providers to actually get to this point where I'm actually then serving into the data center in this place or the application where it's hosted. At this point, remember, we don't know where it's actually hosted. But typically we're dealing on sort of with an Anycast where we're directed to the one that's most local to our environment. So we're going specifically, if I'm coming from that region, I want to connect into an application and it may have a designation specifically for that, which should also be served out from there. But if it's a general one, I'd be going straight to my local or the closest hosting environment to where I'm actually making the request from. And that is obviously to keep down latency and those types of aspects there. So again, with that, I come to the side there and I can see that all of these then start to terminate. This is looking at a forwarding loss there, terminating in Singapore. And then the only exception to that is if I come from the Kuala Lumpur, from the Malaysian one, where I actually then come to into Kuala Lumpur. But if you think of the geography of that, it is literally just across the causeway from Singapore and there and relatively close geographically. So that would be my last hop. The point of that is I'm actually really close to that data center and I can see the dotted line at the end there, which shows me that I don't have any connection. So I can see from this and I can start to break down. And again, I'll throw this out to you, Bernie, if I'm taking my hypothesis here, it's because I have a forwarding loss from here. The next logical thing is that I actually can't reach where that application is hosted, which is in that data center.
Definitely. Something's broken between where that provider is dropping off to where the application is in the data center. And so that's where that's the last point we can show any traffic to.
All right. So what we saw there, you know, we narrowed it down. What you actually said there, we can see it's not a network per se, i.e. it's not in the internet coming down from there, but we saw that forwarding loss occurring at that last hop. And so then what we say from there, okay, it's actually in that data center. And if we then look across other applications in there, everything's within that facility, we can tie it down to that area there. Now, we subsequently know from there that it was actually this calling system that sort of failed. And it was been documented there, it was at the Equinix data center, where they actually went offline. And this was sort of due to upgrade work. Now, the point I want to make here, or the question I want to ask you there, is that we're starting to see, or this occurrence, when we think about technology, we went through that process, is an application, is a network. But there's also these outside influences that can start to have an impact or a detrimental impact. You know, remembering we're putting all this stuff in data centers. In this case, it was a cooling system. Now, the throwback to the cooling system was if we're underpowered or it's not running as it should be, then the temperature rises and then we can have all sorts of things occur. You know, we might have to shut down various racks in the system. It may just crash because it overheats, therefore we get this ungraceful shutdown, which causes all sorts of problems when we try to bring systems coming back up, as we've seen sort of previously there. So I guess the point, well, I'm rambling on here, Bernie, but the point I want to make, or the question I want to ask is there, how do we have to consider, what are these outside influences that might come into play that you wouldn't ordinarily think about, but you use these as sort of indicators to identify?
Yeah, that's kind of like the Murphy's Law kind of thought. Or, you know, I mean, some companies will use something called like Chaos Monkey, to where, you know, they'll do an outage time period where they won't tell people what's going to break, and it just dynamically breaks things, and they see if their services really are resilient as a result of that. You know, it's a great way to really test things to see if it all works properly.
Yeah. And on that as well, it's funny, actually, the we talk about the Chaos Monkey, so it goes around and takes just out a service, so we can see if resilience there. Yeah, he randomly picks stuff. Yeah, so, that's a comedian's routine to have in my head there. But it also is kind of, and you can plan it. It's chaos engineering, right? So we can plan for things being shut down. Now, when something that we don't have any sort of control over, the temperature rising, the outside, the cooling system has a jump in, then we get these situations where it is as much as we've been able to sort of plan for chaos, it's almost like, and please excuse the pun or the analogy there, it's a perfect storm. We get a rising temperature coinciding with, like I say, a failing in a cooling or chilling system there. There might be a situation where the chiller trips out. We actually can't get to reset the chiller, or the engineer who's trying to reset the chiller can't actually get to site. You know, he's unavailable, or his phone doesn't go off. So you can have all these things coming. And in that situation, you almost have to start to put in different processes. So you have to say, okay, this is a situation. How can we assess what's going on? And this is that component where I'm talking about do nothing, you know, and this is what happened in some cases. Is so, you know, we actually talked about the early on, there was considerations whether do they activate the backup systems, but it's at what point to activate those alternate data centers. Do I re-advertise my network out from there? So I guess you have to be able to assess what's going on so you can actually make a decision of what action to take.
No, exactly. And usually you'll have that war room, right? And you'll have somebody who's running that, and they'll have strict, I mean, especially with larger companies, you'll have a very, you know, actionable plan associated with, hey, at this point, this is when we, you know, mitigate this by following this particular path. You know, I remember back in the day having, you know, a DR strategy, and we would test our failover. Usually we'd test our failover, obviously, you know, outside of business hours on a weekend where it wasn't like a Black Friday event or something like that. So you reduced your risk. I think the first time we tested that mitigation plan, it failed miserably. And we found that, you know, we didn't have a good resilient recovery plan. So we had to like update a lot of those things. And I think some of that also comes nowadays of being able to engineer that into your platform, engineer it into your application, whether it auto scales, things like that, right? You know, like you said, exactly. With Anycast as well, being able to fail over or fail over to another provider or have a multi-cloud solution.
Absolutely. That's actually a really good point. You bring up a couple of excellent points there. So you're testing your failover story. I'm so old, Bernie. I actually go back. One of our failover systems was actually to unload the tapes off the machine, get in a car, drive to another country and restart the data. And I think it took us 2 days to do that. So it went across there. But it's also, there's a couple of things in here is that you mentioned the war room, right? Which is really, really, really critical. And the war room can't be this situation where we're constantly pointing fingers. You've got to come from an informed perspective. So identifying, here it is, here's a region we've impacted. To your point, we can take that and learn lessons from that. What do we automate in the future? Okay, when this situation occurred, and you can have multiple situations that all result in the same outcome, we want to take the following steps. Okay, all right, we want to actually, let's call out the engineers. Now, in this case, Red One, for example, actually called their engineers out. They made that assessment and actually took longer than they expected to get things up and going. And so the quicker I can identify this, I can identify, here it is, what process we need to take, and then these are lessons I learned for next time, which is what you say. Let's improve our resilience plan. Let's automate certain aspects of this so I don't need to wait for an engineer to get to site, if that is at all possible. Because again, the nature of the outage or nature of the failure may not always be possible. But if I have an informed view, if I understand where it is and I can quickly identify it, the quicker it is I can actually mitigate it or work around it.
If you set up, once you do a post-mortem, you can see what are the things that went wrong. How do we mitigate this in the future to make it so that it's, you know, more automated or more seamless? And I mean, there's some things you just, you know, can't account for sometimes. It's like, well, maybe that engineer was sick, or maybe he's on vacation. And that was the primary engineer. And that's where you identify where you have bottlenecks, right?
Exactly. And that's where things like Chaos Monkey, Chaos Engineering, and all this comes into play. And you start to identify these things. And then, like you say, you're always going to get these external conditions, as it were, or external circumstances that you can't plan for. But if you're able to at least to compartmentalize that, or word I can't say, if you actually are able to sort of narrow that down, say this is the area we're looking for, then we can sort of take action or the appropriate action.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's mitigation and just reducing your plane of risk. It's connecting the dots, really. I mean, it comes down to what, you know, especially as we look at, you know, the applications, as you mentioned, as they become simpler, they become more complex on the back end. You have microservices, all these different containers and things that are running on different systems that are interconnected, and they might even rely on third-party services. So I think one of the other things, too, is really instrumenting what your dependencies are internally, but also externally what your dependencies are.
Yeah, exactly. So, Bernie, it's been an absolute pleasure, mate, and I hope to have you back real soon.
Always happy to help out and talk about the outages, Mike.
Thanks, mate. So that's our show. Please like and subscribe, and we really appreciate it. And it is valuable to us. As I said at the top of the show, it not only ensures that you are notified as soon as a new episode drops, but it also really helps us shape the content of the show for you. If you'd like to follow us on X, formerly Twitter, at ThousandEyes, and as I said, any questions, feedback, guests, or general information you want to provide to us, please send us a note at internetreport@thousandeyes.com. And so until next time, goodbye.